like to welcome you back to the Tip of the Tower podcast, and we are pleased to have our first in-guest.
In-studio guest.
In-studio guest, because we had, he's our second guest, because technically Chris Johnson was our first guest over the phone. We're really pleased that Keegan Matheson is able to join us, formerly of MLB.com, and ready to, well, he's going to be announcing soon, but
Regarding Creed, as we were talking about before the podcast.
But if you guys follow Keegan on Twitter, you know he is does great work on the Jays, and especially with their prospects. He's been on, Fan 590. He's been on any radio station you've heard of. Keegan has been on it. He is probably one of the top upcoming baseball experts in the country. I'm gonna go there and say that. Keegan, welcome.
Thank you. Just keep going. This is good, guys. I've been flown in studio.
Wine and dine.
And I know that podcast listeners don't quite understand how luxurious the life is, but this podcast studio, there is a spread, there's an open bar.
There's also a clock.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Whole nine yards.
Not many podcast studios have a clock.
We also have a license plate up there for some reason.
Yeah,
beautiful. Way up top.
British Columbia. Not where Keegan's from. Keegan is...
I'm from the proper coast. the good coast of Canada. Beautiful Nova Scotia.
Apparently where they snow a lot, but Keegan forgets about it.
That's my main job. I'm a Nova Scotia propagandist, and I write about the Blue Jays on the side.
Exactly. You had a great, great rant last week on the Bay, which it depicts how I picture people who shop at the Bay. That they'll spend $250 just to look like someone from Nova Scotia.
It was insane. I had a friend from out east who is better dressed than I, so we went to the Bay because they wanted a certain jacket of a certain color, something that I would never leave my house for. And we walked in on the first floor, and we're walking around like two idiots, and it's just all makeup and perfume. And a gentleman approached me and asked if I would like some hand cream. No, sir, I would not. And you keep going around and around, and... Finally, I asked a woman, where's the menswear? She says, it's on floors 4 and 6 or something. And I just instantly became very sweaty and anxious and wanted to run towards any doorway possible. But it was quite the experience. I don't think there's a 7-story building in my town, let alone a 7-story department store. Yeah. So I'm adapting to Toronto. It's been a few years, but... I don't want to fully adapt. I don't want to lose my brand. That's all we have in this life. If you lose your brand, you just might as well disappear. So I've got to stay angsty with Toronto.
A big part of your brand, I would say now, is you wrote a great. I even bought a copy and I was reading it last week or a couple weeks ago. Your prospects, your top Blue Jays prospects. If you haven't, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't bought it, I suggest you do. We will have a link in our description where you can pick it up on Amazon. Like, you have it fully accessible on your phone. I was reading through it, and just a lot of work, I guess, got put into putting something together like that.
Yeah, that's right. It's 50 prospects, and there's another 5 bonus profiles on the back end because, for example, Edward Olivares and Connor Green got traded this year, and if I'm going to sell you 50 of something, I don't want to sell you 48 of it. So you still have 50-some. It's easy to profile a Vladimir Guerrero or a Bo Bichette or somebody in the upper minors like an Anthony Alford, who I even got a chance to see at the major league level this year. A lot of the work in putting a book together on something like this comes in profiling Samad Taylor, McGregory Contreras, these guys, Randy Pondler, guys who are pitching in the middle of nowhere, Virginia, or in a Dominican league somewhere where I can rely a little bit on video and talking to people, but it's mostly I have to rely on scouts I talk to or other people's opinions. So it's a lot of work in that sense, but it was enjoyable. And the big thing I wanted to do with it was write it in normal English. I think when we get to prospect coverage, maybe in other sports, baseball is my lane, so I'll stay in that. But a lot of time when I read prospect coverage, there's a bit of an arrogance to it. You know, I don't want to be a gatekeeper of, you know, saying, this guy's wrong, I'm right. This guy has 80 grade speed, projectable left arm, I don't know if he's going to blah, blah, blah. Because you lose 90% of people. And it kind of bores me to just appeal to the top 10% of baseball fans because there's a lot of other people there. So I like to try to do it in a way where people could read it and understand it, and they could read about Bo Bichette and say, oh, okay, so that's what his leg kicks looks like. That's what it does to his swing. That's why it helps his power through his body. This is what he looks like defensively. And it's, yeah, people have been positive about it far more than I ever expected, but it's been nice.
If there's anything I know, especially I'm more of a hockey guy. I mean, baseball, I'm, you know, taking a, especially with the Blue Jays, especially the last, I'd say, 5-6 years, I've really taken focusing on the Blue Jays too, but prospects between baseball and hockey is totally different. Because, you know, baseball, you have all these different tiers of leagues, and, you know, a first-round pick may not always pan out, and hockey, I mean, hockey kind of is the same way, but just the development stream is totally different. And I can only imagine that, you know, there's so much out there that for these prospects too, like, you don't have just like hockey, like there's very limited sometimes what the information you can get, but a lot of teams now are scouting because you can't trade draft picks in baseball. Prospects become the biggest trade chip that usually a team has, that people want to know as much about these prospects as the Blue Jays did when they traded for Grichuk. You know, you move out of Connor Green, St. Louis fans are going to want to know what this guy's all about. Well, if you read Keegan's book, he gives you a great breakdown of him. But it's good that in baseball they have a lot of this analysis, but picking the right one and knowing which one can give you the better idea of where players project is probably tougher, too.
It is hard, and a lot of I think the simplest way for me to pitch my book, if somebody said pitch your book to me in 5 seconds, what do you, like an elevator pitch, I think you call that?
Yeah.
My elevator pitch would be, I think it's good because I don't care at all if any of them succeed. I hope they all have long, happy lives and make lots of money doing whatever they do. I don't care if they succeed in baseball. It's because I read a lot of prospect profiles that are more fandom driven, and there's a lot of, you know, look out for this guy, I love this guy's swing, and that's good, and there's a lot of value in that and a lot of good analysis and insight. But I think if I were rooting for a guy, or if I had favorites, I think that kind of skews my vision a little bit, because pick a random prospect, to pick Kirby Snead, he's a left-handed relief prospect,
yes guy.
And I think that he is really valuable. I think he's underrated. But that's as far as I want my thinking to go. This isn't about me, right? Even though my name's on the cover of the book, no one cares about me in this, right? They care about the prospects. So if I go into that thinking I'm a fan of this guy, then I'm going to hear, you know, I'm going to talk to a scout, and he's going to say, well, he's got a great arm, but, you know, I don't think he is going to force enough ground balls. All I'm going to hear is great arm because I'm a fan, right? So it's important to stay impartial to that and to be objective, I think. So that's what I look for. If I'm looking at hockey writing, for example, I look for somebody who will be negative about a prospect. You know, it's you see a lot of people will rank the top 100 prospects on a franchise, and number 100 is still this glowing report, and you think, come on, it's not how it works. No. So it's a really imperfect process. I wrote that at the end of the book, that, you know, this is, even rankings are just a convenient way to put them together. It's better than alphabetical, right? 1, 2, 3 makes sense, but is the 34th prospect in my book better than the 35th? No. Like, I don't know. Is it better than the 45th? Maybe. There's a small chance, right? But it's so much more interesting to me than the development phases of basketball, football, or hockey, because the hit or miss percentage is just astronomical. Mark Apple, the number one pick in 2013, I believe, of the Astros, there was a great article in Bleacher Report today by June Lee that he's walking away from baseball. His career was a disaster, and he was the number one pick right ahead of Chris Bryant. And you see so many guys like that. Travis Snyder was the number 6 prospect in Baseball America in 2009. He was supposed to be the next big hitter in baseball. His nickname was Moonraker. He hit 1 million home runs in the minor leagues. Yeah, he's a role player. Decent little career, but not what it was supposed to be. So you're signing kids that are 16 years old, drafting them when they're 17 or 18, and so much can happen. You're not drafting LeBron James and putting him into your lineup day one. You're not drafting a Cam Newton or an Andrew Luck and putting him right in, or a Connor McDavid and putting him right in. The variable between draft day and MLB debut is really fascinating for me, because there is an active component that a team takes to shaping a player. Whereas, you know, when you draft Connor McDavid, yeah, it's pretty much a finished thing. Yes, you're gonna tinker with him, but you have a superstar, period. He's already there. Whereas if you draft the next big thing in baseball, you've got a lot of opportunities to screw it up. And so do they, because they're a kid and you're throwing them money and they still need to grow. But the stumbling blocks along the way really interest me.
You talk about hockey compared to baseball. I mean, in terms of the draft process, you have 7 rounds in hockey. I mean, they're definitely not 7 rounds in baseball. I mean, how many is it now? It's
40.
40.
And some teams
will say at least 30.
Skip out. Some teams will get to 36 and they'll say, yeah, we're good.
No, that's,
and you'll see a lot of, you know, round 37, mm-hmm. Let's just draft our general manager's grandson, or
you're just drafting the best names.
The guy that played for us in 1995, who we really liked, let's draft his cousin as a favor. You see that, but yeah, 40 rounds, it's insane. Yeah.
Just the Jays. I mean, the book is coming at the right time here, because I mean, the Jays were just ranked in the top 10 for Baseball America's organizational talent in 2017. They're in 7th this year, and this is the first time they are in the top 10 since 2015. And obviously they gave away their top talent that year to build with Alex Anthopoulos. So, I mean, obviously that's a little boosted with Vladdy and Bo being as good as they are. But what do you see out of the prospects coming up in the system right now?
I think a lot of the ranking jump has to do with the top-end talent with Bichette and Guerrero. Because when you're ranking a system, are you going to value high-impact guys, which is the top 2 or 3, or are you going to value depth, which is probably 1 to 20? I tend to rank, you know, skew my value a little more towards high-impact guys, because, you know, if your number 18 prospect develops into a utility infielder, great, but you can also find that on waivers. Yeah. You can be smart about that. Developing top-end young talent is far and away, there's no dispute, factually, the best way to win in baseball. Not just because of the talent, though. It's because you're getting Vladimir Guerrero, let's say he does play to an MVP caliber, batting title caliber. You're getting that for $500,000 for a few years.
Yeah.
That's why teams like Houston are so good, because Jose Altuve is making, you know, whatever percent of what
peanuts,
he should be.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant on the Cubs, you know, these are a couple World Series teams. All of these teams are benefiting off of young, controllable talent before they get to the point of signing an 8-year, $200 million deal that sinks the franchise eventually.
What we're about to see next free agency when it rolls around.
Exactly. You know, we see so many ugly deals in baseball now. Albert Pujols is a good example. That contract is a disaster.
How much longer is he?
A few more years at $30 million, at least. $30 and $31 million, I think.
Oof.
But when you can get these young players really impacting you for no more than a couple of million bucks, that is an extreme advantage. And the Blue Jays have done it a couple of different ways. I mean, they've done it through the draft, but also through international signings with a guy like Vlad, with a guy like Lourdes Gurriel, like Richard Urania. That's an area where teams really set each other apart, I think. In the draft, most teams have a similar top 10. Yeah. Most guy, you know, if a guy is ranked number 20 in the draft by the Blue Jays, he's probably ranked around number 20 by the Red Sox, for example. But finding prospects internationally is a real separating point. And there's some teams that just don't do it. Baltimore just ignores it. Yep. That's why they are where they are. They trade away all their international money, and they just don't seem to care about international signings, which is blows my mind, but to each their own, I suppose. You're going to have your can't-miss guys like Vlad Guerrero, but you're going to have those guys that you sign for $10,000 or $20,000 or whatever small amount of money they're being, you know, kind of exploitedly signed for, but it provides tremendous farm system value. And the Jays have accumulated that. So now the reason you're seeing them ranked higher is because they have that top-end talent, but it's also close. It's great to have the 17-year-old who's coming up eventually, which Richard Urania was that for a while, but now he is close to MLB ready, and it's more realistic. And that's what teams want now. No team wants to rebuild over 5 years because money is too important. Teams want guys that are in double A or up, and that's where the majority of their top 10, almost their top 20, the good majority of it is now.
Yeah. And the Jays have four top 100 prospects in the system now. You got Bo and Vlad, obviously, at the top. Anthony Alford, I believe, was 60s?
Right on 60.
Yeah. And then Nate Pearson, which was the big one for me, came in right near the end of the list. A guy drafted 28th overall in the draft, clearly. drafted in the draft. That's a foreign concept. They got him with the compensatory pick from Cleveland signing Edwin. Right. I mean, when I watched the draft, it was a guy that said that he can hit 100 with the fastball, but his other pitches were farther behind, and they didn't see him as more than a reliever coming out of the draft because he had a killer fastball, mm-hmm. but his off speed wasn't as good. I mean, what his unbelievable stats this season! Yeah. What a crazy year to have.
Yeah, he's a really fascinating prospect because he kind of came out of nowhere. He went the junior college route, which is rare for a guy being picked this high, and added a ton of velocity going into his final year. In a bullpen session ahead of the draft, he was clocked at 102 miles an hour. Now, you can max out in a bullpen session. It's not a game. But he still hits 100, 101 in a game, which, yes, it's interesting because that's not as special as it was 10 years ago. A lot of guys can throw 100. You get excited, but, I mean, Connor Green could throw 100, and the numbers never backed that up. He couldn't miss bats, and everybody knew the fastball was coming if he needed a strike at all.
Yeah.
What makes Pearson exciting, though, is that he's huge. He's 6'6", 240,
massive.
I think. He's built like a prototypical pitcher, and that at least suggests that he might be able to hold up that velocity because he's not a 6'1", 160-pound kid putting the entire force of his body on his elbow. Pearson can use his legs to drive, his huge legs. He can use his core, his midsection, to power his body, and hopefully that helps him hold up over innings. Now, the big challenge for him this year will be innings number 4, 5, and 6. The big challenge will be July, August, getting into the year, because in Vancouver, he was so good. I think it was over 20 innings in his debut. He had 7 hits and 26 strikeouts. He only allowed 2 runs, so that's a .90 ERA. And it was probably as dominant a player as I saw in minor league baseball all season at any level, because it looked like a guy that was playing 2 or 3 levels below where he should be. Hitters were just hoping to God it was a fastball and swinging. And sometimes you'd make contact. Now, is that fastball going to stay at 99 in the 5th and 6th inning? We'll see. Is the changeup going to develop? Is the curveball going to develop? We'll see. Because pumping a great fastball against 19, 20-year-olds in Vancouver in the Northwest League, that'll work. Now you're moving into maybe Lansing. Wouldn't surprise me if he skips right to Advanced Day Dunedin. That's a bit of a different game. And now I'm not doubting him whatsoever. The Blue Jays are extremely high on him. A lot of people I've talked to in around the Blue Jays say that they're high on him, and they don't say that about many prospects.
Yeah,
normally
you keep
get
it under wraps most
you
of
get
the time.
The company line, which is smart. But you'll talk to some scouts and some executives now that look at him and say, how did he get to 28? And the Blue Jays were able to get him there because they were out ahead on him. I remember months before the draft, I was talking to somebody, and they told me, you know what, keep an eye on Nate Pearson for the Blue Jays. I said, who the hell is Nate Pearson? I had no idea. You know, I'd done a decent amount of head work on the draft just to keep up to date with it. And I said, Nate Pearson?
Yeah.
And I looked, and he's from this junior college. I said, in what round, right? But he really popped up at the end. So when some teams were standing there saying, we know this guy's popped up, but we don't know much about him, the Blue Jays had been out ahead of that. They knew his medicals. You know, he has a screw in his elbow, so they obviously knew a lot about that, and they were comfortable with it. They knew his track record. They knew how he added velocity, and they knew the player. The Blue Jays are so big on character and culture, which is a word I still don't know how to define. But one theme that runs through their draft is that most of the guys are considered to be good guys, and Pearson fits that. So I think he is a candidate to really jump this next year. He wasn't ranked on MLB.com's top 100. He was numbered 91 on Baseball America. If he puts together a full season I mean, with an ERA under four type of thing, and continues to flash these tools, I think he's a top 50 guy probably next year and can rise up pretty quick. And maybe he does stay as a starter. It's all just going to depend on those secondary pitches.
Do you find now that a lot of teams want to avoid labeling a prospect like that as a reliever just because they – well, A – I don't see the Blues, as you mentioned, they're really high on him. He's never going to be included in trade talks unless you're getting the sky and above. But do you think that the reason why is because they want to keep that value as high as possible, even though relievers have become very valuable, especially those cheap ones, as you mentioned?
I think this is one of the more interesting things in baseball right now, actually. The value difference between starters and relievers and how it's kind of closing a little bit. If a team drafts a Nate Pearson or a Connor Green, they're still going to push them as far as possible as a starter. If the Blue Jays were in contention at the end of the year and their bullpen is decimated, maybe that changes a bit. Maybe they fast track a guy with a big arm. But otherwise, you want to keep him as a starter as long as possible. That's the old thinking, and it still makes sense in the new era. It's good. But look at the contracts that relievers are getting. And yes, there's the big, I mean, Aroldis Chapman, Kenley Jansen contracts, but there's guys with 4.1 ERAs that you have to Google that are getting $5 or $6 million a year. And that's really chewing away at teams' payrolls. And a lot of teams are overpaying, and it's not working out. So that is kind of a market inefficiency right now that a lot of teams can exploit. The Blue Jays did so good last year at putting together a cheap bullpen. Roberto Osuna was still cheap, even though he had his struggles. You have a guy like Dominic Leone, he pitched very well. Danny Barnes pitched very well. Ryan Tepera. Yeah. All of these guys are either drafted and developed or found on waivers or, you know, just your classic reliever guy that looks like your buddy. But they did well, and they did well for cheap. Jays didn't have to waste $5 million bucks on a lefty specialist. Didn't have to waste $6 million bucks on a long man, which a lot of teams are doing, trying to patchwork it together. So I think teams will be a little more open to the idea. They'll still push them as far as they can as a starter, but the dollars matter here in this sense, I think. And that's why when you look down through the system, a guy like Kirby Snead, a guy like Zach Jackson, who was drafted as a reliever, a right-hander from Arkansas, some of these guys just being a reliever, it's okay. You know, you can draft some, you know, an 8th rounder or a 12th rounder and say, hey, you're a reliever. Let's try to fast track you. And I think the teams that do that are really going to benefit. You know, we're no longer in the era of Moneyball. Nobody's going to figure out baseball at this point. Yeah. I'd like to be an optimist, but that's done. No one's going to say, aha, there's not going to be a movie made in 20 years about what someone figured out in 2017. But little tiny edges can still help. And I think this is a tiny edge, getting cheap relievers. Yeah.
It does help, I think, that the Blue Jays had a lot of depth in their bullpen because, you know, they made the trade to add an outfielder. And this is kind of where I wanted to bring the conversation next, because, you know, the prospect talk is very intriguing. I think the Blue Jays value that prospect system a lot, especially with everyone kind of worried about the present. But it doesn't seem like they're too worried about that because they're concerned more about the future. But just looking at the Jays' offseason, and many were looking at, you know, the big names of like Lorenzo Cain, you know, JT Martinez. Technically, he's still out there, but from what it looks like, the Blue Jays are just not going to break the bank on a guy like that. Do you feel that just looking at the Blue Jays' offseason and knowing they liked what they had in the bullpen, you know, they didn't have to go out and get a huge arm. Well, they still haven't figured out that fifth rotation spot. I think they're still going to be looking, but they don't have to blow their brains out for that. They just need to add some depth in the infield, which they did through those trades. Do you think that having all that set before the offseason really made this offseason easier for them in terms of what they needed to do and get done?
I think so. This was never going to be an earth-shaking offseason, I don't think. The biggest variable being Josh Donaldson, but that, you know, that was never as close as the buzz suggested.
Did that even make sense?
I don't think. It makes sense if you're going to turn the whole franchise in that direction, I think. And, I mean, it's still a relevant question right now, today. Yeah. You know, what do you do with Josh Donaldson? If you trade Josh Donaldson, then you're a sitting duck team for 2018 because Troy Tulowitzki is there. Kendrys Morales is there. Russell Martin is there. Big numbers for aging guys that you can't move unless it's a salary dump and you eat a lot, which you don't want to do. No. So moving Donaldson didn't really make sense. Maybe at the trade deadline where you are through the season and you've seen the outcomes, perhaps. But I don't think that this was supposed to be a really earth-shaking offseason for the Blue Jays. Now, the moves the Jays have made really do align with the front office, with Ross Atkins, with Mark Shapiro, and what they've been saying, which is all about depth. Versatility is a word I have heard far more times than I'd like to admit this offseason. But with Yennervis Solarte, with Aledmys Diaz, Randall Grichuk, who can play all over the outfield, and Curtis Granderson, who isn't terribly versatile, of course, but he at least benefits the outfield as a complementary piece. Complementary, that's the other buzzword. Complementary and versatile. But these all raise the floor of the team. You'll appreciate them in June or July when you're not seeing Ian Parmley in the outfield, I guess. when you're not seeing Ryan Goins hitting sixth for the 12th straight game. These guys at the very bottom of the roster that you see every year and then forget about them. I think you'll appreciate this more at that point. When Tulowitzki is injured or if Devin Travis needs some time, that's valuable. What the offseason has lacked, and whether it's lacking, whether you need it or not, it's the real ceiling raiser. Maybe that is Randall Grichuk. He has that potential, but he's flawed, of course. There hasn't been the big splash. There hasn't been Giancarlo Stanton, but I don't think there was ever going to be.
No.
So I think this is still about complementary pieces. This is about finding rotation depth and bullpen depth now. I think the focus is really going to be on arms. But it's a team, I think, that can still be involved. They're not a World Series team. I mean, look around the league. If you're 25 of these teams in the league, you're looking at Houston and New York and a couple of other teams and thinking, like, what?
Yeah, no.
What are we doing here? That's a factor around the league. Maybe not a good factor. But can the Blue Jays get to July and be involved for the second wild card? Sure. The Minnesota Twins were last year. The Blue Jays were beat up. If Aaron Sanchez pitches, that helps. And I'm not trying to spin positivity on the Blue Jays, because if they win or lose, doesn't impact my life at all. It's, maybe people tweet me nicer things, but that's okay.
Maybe.
But they're in the middle, where a lot of teams are right now. And that should help them sustain something for this season. But if it all goes down, if it all goes south, then you have Jay Happ, you have Marco Estrada, you have Curtis Granderson, you have Steve Pierce on expiring contracts. Whatever relievers you bring in, maybe there's another Joe Smith situation where you bring in a guy and deal him. You'll have a pivot point, I think, around July. But for now, it's kind of business as usual. Just like the Jay Happ signing and the Kendrys Morales signing the last couple of years. They're not going to shake everything up, but they're there. Major league moves, I suppose.
With Kendrys Morales and Steve Pierce, I mean, they play a role, obviously, with the Jays. But Kendrys, I mean, you're looking at probably a DH spot because Justin Smoke is great with the glove, and obviously he had a breakout season last year. Steve Pierce, I mean, they've talked about him being I've heard the platoon role being used with him, he and Granderson. Is there a move that you think can be made where the Jays are looking to offload one of these guys? Because I don't know that there's enough room to fit both.
Yeah, it's hard. Right now, probably not. A contract like Morales or even Pierce, if you were looking to offload money, maybe that's something that you're able to include in a much larger deal, but that's probably not something that's coming around the corner for the Blue Jays. And Morales still has 2 years left. And in a game that's getting faster and younger and, ideally cheaper for a lot of teams, he is none of those.
No. Kendrys Morales might be the slowest team in the league I've ever seen on base paths.
He's a tough fit in the lineup. And, you don't need to be a base stealer. You can be very slow and still be very good. But the additional value outside of his bat is really lacking. So for the same reason that a lot of fans want him out of town, that's the same reason that another team looks at that and says, no.
Yeah.
You know what? Pay his full contract, sure. Send him on over, and we'll house him.
Yeah.
But it's really tough with the money involved, because for many teams, if you're looking to get a guy that cannot play defense but can put up a 780 OPS,
it's not terribly hard to find.
Yeah.
The minor leagues have a bunch of guys like that who are 27 and they'll probably strike out 200 times, but they'll hit some home runs.
Yeah.
Home runs aren't hard to find in baseball either, which is why a guy like Morales is less impactful. So, yeah, those are a couple of not squeaky wheels. You know, Pierce, less so. I think if he's healthy, he can still almost exceed his contract value. But Morales, it does clog things up a bit. You'd like to have DH to cycle Tulowitzki and Donaldson through, I think.
Is that, just in hindsight, that move just sort of a knee-jerk reaction by the Jays because Edwin signed and they went, oh boy, we need a guy that can hit dingers.
Before, he signed before Edwin left, so.
But that was after Edwin had turned down the initial offer.
It did keep them safe, and even at the time, you know, I try to stay true to it and look back at my opinion at the time. Didn't love it at the time, but yeah. When I still looked at his spray chart and his contact numbers, you still looked at, you know, where the balls went that he hit the year prior, and I think he had 30 home runs or 31, and I looked at that and said, well, if he was in the Rogers Center, maybe 34 or 35 of those go out. Maybe the ballpark will help him. We were also coming off a year where the Blue Jays were very good offensively.
Yeah.
So maybe he's going to have guys on base and so on and so forth. And he could still play a first base at an average MLB level if it weren't for Justin Smoak being there. You know, we didn't expect Justin Smoak to be that good. The Blue Jays obviously knew something. They nailed that contract.
Yeah.
But you know, I didn't expect that at all. I'm not going to.
No, I don't think anybody did.
No, I'm not going to pretend I wrote an article saying great idea. It was more just
they put Justin Smoak in the lineup and everybody went, no, what are you doing?
Let's see. But you know, it's tough now because, like I said, power is not as unique. People talk about Randall Grichuk. Maybe he has 30 home run power. I mean, like, Ezekiel Carrera has 30 home run power at this point, you know, with the ball being what it is and totally
just
not juiced,
crush.
We think. But you can find a lot of guys with that 15 to 22 home run type power, you know.
Ezekiel Carrera is on like a Jose Bautista type arc, is what you're saying? Yeah. Like career resurgence.
Yeah, here he comes.
Yeah,
he's really a man without a country right now.
Yeah.
But I don't know where he fits, but it's you know, you can find so many guys in baseball that are going to give you a dozen, a little more home runs. It's not very common to see a guy finish the season with 4 or 5 homers now. You know, the ball being what it is, how strong people are. You know, you don't have that tiny, speedy guy or the guy with slow hand eye. It's a different game. So, yes, Morales is, you know, it's not like he's a minor leaguer. He has MLB value. He fits on good teams, and he's worth a lineup spot on most teams. But it's a tough fit in Toronto where they want to be younger, faster, and it's not really working out at that position. But, you know, it's not out of the question that he bounces back a bit this year and at least ups the OPS a little bit.
As we do this, lovely, lovely man and baseball reporter Shai Davidi walks by. We've just got all the personalities.
Oh wow!
In today, look at us.
I was trying to flag him down, but he.
You want me to go run him down?
No, that's all right.
He can just shout into a mic from a distance.
I didn't bring my picture of him to get signed today. Have to wait till
okay, you know, he's
next
getting,
time.
He's getting next he's time. Getting ready to go to the Olympics.
Wait until I'm down and done eating. That's right. He's I feel happy for him. He's
noted
gets a break from baseball.
Man. Yeah, that's and then good. He's right back to it as soon as he gets back.
That's right.
Back to the grind in Florida
from the Olympics from hockey. I think he's doing men's and women's hockey there.
Yeah.
So from the premier sport in the Winter Olympics to
it's still premier even there.
Yeah, I know.
Blue Jays spring training.
Yeah, you know, I always think. Like,
I mean,
you know,
most people would still take the ladder in a heartbeat.
People, you know, the one thing is because Shai was our instructor last year, and you know, you think that, you know, going down to Florida when the weather's crappy up here, and you know, being in Florida and seeing baseball, but some of these guys just get tired of it too because they live out of hotels or they live out of. And, you know, the eating, they're not eating the best.
Yeah, we talked to Mike Wilner last year, and he said they had Sportsnet had him in a spot and just, like, a rented-out house, but he was by himself away from his family.
It's not easy. A lot of guys don't look forward to it. I was with a couple of other writers grabbing a bite, not at all in a dive bar the other night, and I was saying, yo, guys, like, I can't wait to get out of here, go down to spring training, because I haven't been going long, and they've been going for more years than I. And they said, man, I don't want to go at all.
My spot.
I don't want to live in a hotel room for 5 or 6 weeks. And it is tough because, yes, it sounds exciting, but, you know, industry secret for listeners, most of Most of the job is standing around, drinking too much coffee to the point where you're anxious.
Or water. Or
getting too hot. Standing around some more. Being hungry, so eating something that you shouldn't. And then spending the rest of the day complaining that you ate that thing. That's really the gig.
Yeah. Well, you're at the stadium for most of the day, I would assume.
Oh, even in the summer. I mean, yeah. My goodness, the food I ate this summer. I mean, at least two meals a day at the ballpark. That's not good for anybody. So it was.
Oh my God.
It's
But
yeah.
you get there in the morning, and then what? Games at 1:00. Goes till probably 4:00. Then you're writing your story.
Yeah.
You do all your interviews. You don't leave till like maybe what? 6:00, 7:00?
Yeah, till you're out of there.
So it's definitely not
tough.
It's a grind.
Shy does it right. He is the, he's the model. He's the one that will have a very nice pre-cooked meal in the press box, or he'll get a good salad. And when he walks by with that, we're sitting huddled over our breakfast buffet from the press box. And I just think every time I think, ugh, someday.
One of these days it's going to be that statue of Ted Rogers, and it's just going to be Shy sitting right beside him.
Especially when the doctor's just like, guy, let's get serious here.
He turns the lights
out,
Shy.
Don't say no to salad anymore.
What do you mean you're only 30? You're you're dying.
But, you know, Blue Jays fans have kind of been teased the last, I would say, since, what was it, last week when I heard the story about Bautista getting his eyes checked. And, you know, like you couldn't help it. I think it was especially on...
couldn't just have a bad season, right? He had to...
I wouldn't say shocking because, you know, a story like that would only come out when a guy is not being signed or not being looked at by teams. But
they just signed him a week later.
But then you hear, oh, Bautista's in Toronto. But then I also remember Bautista has business interests in Toronto.
Yeah. Keegan, what do you think of Bautista's new watch?
I saw that tweet, and I think the tweet said Jose Bautista spent a year designing this watch. And I said he probably took a couple phone calls from you and said, okay.
Picked out a design.
Yeah, that's.
I saw the main gripe on Twitter was that I haven't seen really like full shots of it, but there's a 19 where the 12 should be, and people are like, well, people will think it's 19 o'clock.
My reaction to that was the same as the eyesight story, which was like, okay.
Bautista.
I mean, the Blue Jays test eyesight. More than a little bit. They test everything. Their high-performance department is very thorough in ways that a lot of teams aren't. I doubt that they missed his bad eyesight. Jose Bautista puts more money into his body than any athlete, probably in baseball, probably close to any athlete in sports. I mean, not just like buying weights for his house. I mean...
He takes batting practice with fruit.
Yeah, it's crazy. The things he does. I actually went back and I read, it was an article that Shy did at the time, actually, a couple of years ago. And in part of it spoke of, you know, Jose Bautista meeting with, you know, with people who work in Indian medicine to learn breathing techniques, to do things.
Yeah.
So things as deep as that, you know. He's not just doing yoga. He is going deep dive into, like, other cultures of medicine. He didn't get his eyes checked?
No.
He
also does all that stretching in the outfield. Like,
exactly.
He's never not moving
around.
He's never
still. He is in tremendous shape.
Yep.
I'm not just saying that for his age. I'm not saying it related to skill set or anything, but he is in tremendous shape. I think he's probably gotten his eyes checked. You know, it's whenever I hear a story like that, I think to myself, first question I ask myself is, where would that come from and why? And in the off season, the answers are usually from an agent and because a guy has no interest.
Yeah. Is there a spot realistically that he could land? Or
I think I'm still where I was a few months ago, which is that he could wait on an injury for a contending team. I mean, you know, if the Dodgers lose a couple of outfielders or something like that, you know, or a team, if two outfielders collide and they both tear an ACL, something like that, where a team needs
freak injuries,
a veteran guy, maybe a spot opens up.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's a good roster. Is there a contending roster in baseball right now that's looking at their roster and saying, man, we're a World Series contender. What about that right field / DH position? I don't think that exists, right?
And that also eliminates half the teams.
He does. So, other than that happening, I think his only other option would be to go to a poor team, you know, a poor quality that still has some money, of course. But whether that's a Tampa Bay or a team like the Phillies, just something like that where they say, hey, you can teach a couple of our young guys. You'll put a few people in the seats, which, you know, it does matter.
Yeah.
You know, maybe come in here, hit 20 homers before the All-Star break, and then maybe we'll trade you to a contender.
It's kind of like what happened with the Blue Jays and Michael Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they traded for Saunders. They knew they just needed someone to plug in while they had those injuries, and you knew it was never going to amount to anything much, but at least gave him a chance to potentially get another shot.
I had high hopes for Michael Saunders. Yeah. What are you talking about?
But I think that, like, his likeliest shot at a championship, I think, would be to sign with a bad team and play well, and then go to a good team.
Because, yep.
Because, I mean, money matters, of course, but at this point, he's made money. It's got to be a little bit about championship and legacy and these exactly. things that do yeah. mean a lot to him, and it's tough. Because other teams don't care that he's Jose Bautista at all. Toronto, it matters, sure.
Yeah, it's,
if you're the yeah. the Marlins, you don't care. You look at him and you say, okay, this is your age. These are your numbers last year.
Well, Marlins don't care
these
about much of anything. Right
no,
now.
they should fold at this point. But you just look at who he is on paper. The legacy doesn't matter because it didn't happen in your market. So, yeah, he's in a tough place. It's not a good place. And I mean, if he was out of baseball next year, it wouldn't surprise me. I think he gets a shot this year, but he has to keep himself afloat now.
So Bautista should join Goins in Kansas City to complete that. Oh, that ALCS flubbed
How would
duo.
That,
you
know, that would be great.
What oh, the memories. He came close. Did he win the home run derby that year when he was in Kansas City or no?
I forget. That's a good question, actually. Yeah.
He hit a lot of home runs.
He did.
He crushed a lot of balls that day. With free agency, I mean, it's clearly been a huge flop for a lot of players. And we talk about spring training, what is it?
Almost
2 weeks, pitchers and catchers
yeah,
report?
Yeah, they report.
And then another couple days after that when the teams report for first practices. I mean, we've been waiting for the entire offseason. It's been, well, wait for Ohtani yeah. to land, then the free agent market will get going. Wait for Giancarlo to land, then the free agent market will get going. Marcelo Zuna to land to a lesser yeah. degree. I mean, what happened?
Yeah, it's now I guess you're waiting on Darvish. Arrieta or Martinez or something. But
and also Kane. Kane and
yeah,
Yelich just dropped to
but there's not
Brewers.
Even that many players behind them. I mean, like guys like Hosmer compared
yeah,
to
Yeah, that's
two,
still a big one.
I can see how Darvish and Arrieta are related because they're both very good pitchers. But it's not like there is a J.D. Martinez Jr. just waiting right behind him. And, you know, it's not like there was a Lorenzo Cain-esque player right behind him. That
there's
was
no Kendrys Morales waiting behind yeah, an Eddie no, Encarnacion.
There's not a guy that's going to make a few million less and a year less that you're looking for a hard comparable on. Now, the big buzzword has been collusion, mm. which, I mean, we like to be dramatic about things, I guess. Now, I don't think that MLB owners are texting one another saying, don't sign this guy, let's drive his price down and try to negatively yeah. impact. It's like, there are some unsavory things going on, I think, but the word collusion is pretty heavy. I think yeah. this is a market and a league that unfortunately realizes winning isn't extremely important. Because if you own a team, it's not like if somebody listening to this podcast owned a team, you're going to try to win. Maybe money isn't that important because yeah. you're owning a baseball team. You love it. Not everybody that owns a baseball team is a baseball fan dying to win a World Series. It's just not how it works. You know, mostly because most extreme baseball fans aren't billionaires, right? So.
Yeah.
There are a lot of teams spending $90 million on their payroll and making a huge profit. If you're looking at that from a business sense, you say, hey, cool, let's keep it going. Maybe we can chop it down to 80, make a little more profit. Let's get younger. Yeah. From an ownership standpoint, I'm not defending ownership. I think players should get all the money. But if you're looking at J.D. Martinez as an owner and you're saying, gosh, if I'm going to be paying an employee $25 million a year. And that number shrinks when we talk about sports, but $25 million. Think of what you can do with that. You know, is it going to raise my profits that much each year as an owner? And we're at the point now in big money baseball, what are we, 10 years, 12 years into big money baseball when contracts just got stupid, we've seen how they fail. We've seen how long contracts fail, like Albert Pujols. Miguel Cabrera is going to start looking like that soon. We've seen how short contracts fail, like a Ryan Howard. That big contract he signed with the Phillies was a disaster. Because now at this point, teams have had an opportunity to see the end of those. For a while, they'd only seen the beginning, you know, and that's a factor with Josh Donaldson. If you sign him for 6 years, $150 million, years one, two, three, and maybe four, great. Are you expecting year six to be great? When you're signing these people, are you expecting them to be an all-star at age 42? Or are you just kind of saying, hey, that's dead money, but we'll win something in the meantime? All of these teams have done that, won nothing in the meantime, and now they are paying very old, very bad players more than anyone on their roster. So it's kind of a lesson learned type of thing. There is a little bad stuff going on with like the desire to win is not 100%, all that stuff, but teams have learned that these big contracts suck. And the system itself is broken. These massive contracts should be given to guys 2 or 3 years into their career and take them to age 30. And then you get a 5 years for $10 million or whatever you're going to actually be worth.
Yeah.
Players are getting paid nothing for their best years and everything for their worst years. It doesn't make sense.
With just players, I mean, do you see the market being like next year being a factor? Because obviously nobody's going to sign a one-year deal and expect anything near what they're worth this season. I mean, you're trying to avoid 2019 at all costs
that
with
is
the talent.
Tough. I mean, like an extreme move from a Martinez or a Darvish, maybe like really betting on yourself could be, okay, I'll sign for 1 year, I'll come back on the market next year. But you're going to get swallowed up by the big names, by the Harpers, the Machados, and those
they're all going to New York anyway.
What a time that'll be. But that will wipe a team out. I mean, if New York signs one of those guys, that's probably their offseason. If Boston signs one of them, boom, that's the offseason. Let's pick some scrap heap guys to play in AAA, but that's such a huge investment. So
minor league deals the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's going to wipe some teams out financially, and they'll do it because the desire to win is still there for most franchises, but it's going to be a top-heavy market, and I think that'll get log-jammed as well. You know, you'll get Scott Boras will be in there doing whatever he does again, I'm sure, and I think it's going to be another slow one next year for sure.
Yeah.
It's weird because, you know, just looking at what contracts the Blue Jays have, the big ones, obviously, Russell Martin, Troy Tulowitzki, which are, I think Russ has 2 more years left, and then Troy's got three or four?
I believe it's three with an option.
Three with an option, and we know that option's most likely not going to be taken. But do you think this is the, just hearing what you're saying, this is probably the pitch that Shapiro and Atkins are selling the ownership right now, which is saying we don't need Ross Atkins and Mark Sproul don't picture me as a guys who want to blow themselves out in free agency anyways, but with a guy like Josh Donaldson coming up, Blue Jays fans would obviously want him to stay, but maybe the pitch would be we got to think down the road and sustainability rather than appeasing the fan base and blowing our brains out with another long contract like that.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Where they came from in Cleveland, obviously less budget. And one of the kind of the buzzword terms around them and other teams of similar budgets was 29 and decline. You let your player get to 29 and then you just decline them. You know, maybe 30 or 31 or whatever, but you don't lock up that mistake free agent, right? Josh Donaldson is a great player. He is an MVP caliber player. I'm saying nothing to the impact of his skill, whether you're talking about Donaldson or a Machado, whoever you're talking about a ball player in their early 30s, and history is not kind to guys when they're 37, 38, 39. So I think the fan interaction, the fan interest, and Shapiro has said this in interviews, which I do admire, he said, you know, if it weren't for the fans, we might have stripped this down earlier and really had taken a different route, but the fans are here and they want something. We owe it to them to contend. And I think that is a good thing to say, and that makes sense. You know, if you're filling the building, don't screw people over and throw out a $20 million lineup, right? So how would bringing him in for those years impact the payroll down the road? Well, you'd have to be very careful in free agency, and you'd have to really nail it drafting and developing. You know, if you have Vlad and Bo Alfred, Pearson, Borucki, Zoik, everyone coming up and all making the roster. There turns into this miracle team where every prospect works out. Fantastic. Pay Josh Donaldson $80 million a year. Who cares? Because you have young, controllable, affordable talent. But if you do lock up Donaldson, then you've got to be really smart elsewhere. Then you can't have another Morales, probably. All of your contracts, your free agency would need to be more guys like Jay Happ, who you hit on, who is valuable. You know, not a superstar, but good quality, consistent value. You'd need to nail it. It really limits the room for mistake, I think. You know, if you lock up Donaldson, great, but you can't mess up the next one or the next one. You got to be much more careful.
With free agency, sorry, cut you off there,
go
Dave.
Ahead. I haven't started.
I'm full of questions because we don't talk a whole lot of baseball on here because there hasn't been a lot to talk about with the Blue Jays, unfortunately. So I've been waiting to get you in to ask a lot of questions. You talked about the bad contracts and teams starting to see how bad they can really be near the end of them and what guys, the fear of signing a guy to a long-term deal. Is there, you think, a case to be made for the MLB shortening the need to have older guys in free agency maybe cut down the age required to be a free agent? Because you get guys that are, the main free agents in this crop are 29, 30,
yeah.
31. You're obviously a little less inclined to sign a guy to a seven-year deal for big money when he's going to be 38 at the end of the contract. I mean, is there a case to be made there?
I'd love it if there would be. And I bet that's going to be a focal point of the players' union and their case when they look at the next CBA, which hopefully doesn't turn into a strike-threatening disaster, but it probably is going to. It's getting a bit better because you see guys like a Machado or a Harper who debut so early. It'll be the same with Guerrero, the same with Bichette, who are debuting at 19, 20, 21. That's good, but I mean, a guy like Josh Donaldson, this is his first shot to get paid, and he's 33. Same with Bautista, same with Encarnacion. Guys that don't bloom until they're 24, 25, which is very common in baseball. So the market is full of guys who are 30, 31. And especially when you look at pitchers, I mean 30, 31, if you're a guy that throws velocity, especially if you're a reliever, you're done. Yeah. Most of the time. There's lots of examples of guys that pitch through the 30s, of course, but when you look on average where your velocity goes, where your arm health goes for relievers, that's not a good time
to have your first opportunity.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see a guy like Matt Harvey. I mean, he got dead arm this year, and he was basically shut down for
exactly.
The year.
And it's you get into just not even from a baseball standpoint, but if you just look at this from a hard labor standpoint, I mean, yes, they're making millions, so your sympathy can't be too great, but you don't have a choice to choose. Yeah, you can get drafted at 18, hit free agency at 31, 13 years until you get to choose where you play.
How many years of eligibility do you have to? Is it 7?
In the minor leagues?
No, isn't there a prerequisite for service in the MLB?
Well,
before
in
you
the MLB,
hit?
Yeah, you go through your three rookie deal years, and then your three arbitration years to go through the 6. So it's a long time now. They're getting paid so much, it's hard to connect with that on a human level. But
$30 million a year, you know, I feel real bad for that guy.
Yeah, the players union would have a case. And like I said earlier, it just doesn't make sense to really hamstring these guys. And I don't think for a second that's by accident. You know, the owners aren't sitting there saying, man, I wish we could pay them during their prime. Like, no, you get them cheap when they're good, and then people who want to pay them for bad years can go ahead and do it.
I think just from what I think hockey has done right in this case is, too, they limit the contract years you can sign a player. So 8 years if the guy is re-signing as your own player, 7 if he's a free agent. But also you're seeing like a guy like Connor McDavid. He's played his 3 years of his entry level. Now it's the payday. I think that really helps the players. I think if the MLB, if MLB players were to start to see that, I mean, MLB players also make more than NHL players do on a regular basis, but I think if they see that, I think it's going to make, for you, we were talking about the CBA here, very, very interesting. And do you think, who do you think will be more inclined to push that? The older players that need these deals or the younger players that see that chance to get paid earlier?
I think hopefully the older players will stay involved in that. It won't impact them as much, but it's still about setting them up. Now, and the younger players as well are just getting into it. I mean, if you're 22, 23, do you have any idea really what's going on in that sense? Like, yes, you're aware because you're getting paid, but not a lot of those guys are sitting there thinking about, you know, complex labor law issues, right? So I think a lot of this is on the MLBPA, just leadership, you know, which is made up of ex-players and, you know, current veteran players, which is good because they've experienced it. But, you know, there are just so many examples of guys who bounce around. And like, I mean, relief pitchers are great examples. They are like running backs in the NFL.
Yep.
They get run into the ground, an entire career put on an elbow. Which, you know, throwing a baseball is not a human thing to do. It's not normal. You know, take this tiny ligament and you'll try to pull a truck with it. Sure, great idea.
You throw a ball once without properly stretching and your arm hurts for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're in pain. So for a reliever, you do this for a few years and you're a guy like a Danny Barnes. You're a guy like Ryan Tepera, and you're not always lucky enough even to get to those arbitration years. For a lot of these guys, you just get through your $500,000 seasons. Maybe you get 1 year of arbitration, and you get a number like Aaron Loop would get, $1.5 million or whatever. And that's it. Because then you get to 28 or 30, and boom, you have Tommy John. Well, okay, there's another year and a half. Maybe you climb back to the majors, get a couple more days of service time, and, oh, wow, I only throw 89 now. It's, you know, so it's a lot of time and not a lot of reward at the proper time. It's a broken system. It really is.
Is that why we're seeing a guy? When I heard you bring up the relievers part, Ryan Tepera even brought up the idea of him wanting to start down the road and adding in more pitches, because now you're seeing, I mean, obviously Aaron Sanchez is a little bit of a blimp to that, but starting pitchers usually tend to try to, you know, prolong their careers by, you know, not throwing as hard and, you know, having those off speed pitches to work in. And I think what maybe has helped Aaron Sanchez get into the rotation was his curveball is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone remembered the fastball when he was in the bullpen, but his other stuff was just so good that it allowed him to, I mean, the stupid blister didn't really agree with it, but I think when I hear a guy like Ryan Tepera say that, it makes you think, okay, yeah, bullpen guys can get paid a lot, but there's some that don't get paid a lot and they get worn out so much. Mm. I look at a Roberto Osuna who's had his, you know, mental, taken a toll on him mentally in that role and physically too with the things he's gone through.
Yeah, he had Tommy John when he was 16, I think, right? And we don't talk about that much, but the average lifespan for a Tommy John surgery isn't until he's going to be 40. It's going to be a factor soon, you know.
And he's another guy who's talked about starting down the road. Like he's not, he does. You know, he says he likes being a closer, but if he had a chance to start, he would start because it won't put as much. You think there is a case that, yeah, obviously you're not going to be throwing 100 all the time. That strain on the arm won't be as much? Or is this pitchers maybe need to develop other ways, as you brought up Nate Pearson, of developing those other muscles so it's not putting them a strain on the elbow?
Yeah, having a more complete body helps. You know, that's where the high-performance department comes in. And you see so many high school pitchers that just try to rip 100. And, I mean, I don't like it. If I hear that a prospect throws 100, I don't care at all. It barely moves the needle for me anymore.
Yeah.
Because if they're 19 and throw 100, whatever. So does 100 other guys that I can name off right now that will never touch the major leagues because they walk 7 guys per 9 innings. And their elbow's going to blow up soon. You know, it's, when I hear of a kid throwing 100, I almost think like, don't, you know, ripping off sliders is really hard on the elbow, of course, but just maximizing effort and going beyond. I mean, you're already going beyond what a human body's supposed to do by throwing a baseball 90, but maxing that out and in such irregular intervals. That's why baseball is a dangerous sport. I mean, if you're playing hockey, you're fluid. You're always in motion. Basketball a little bit, soccer a little bit, but baseball is just burst movements. It's incredibly unnatural. You know, that's why you have so many muscle injuries, because a guy will stand still for an hour and then sprint for 3 seconds. You don't do that in the real world. Whereas in hockey, you're just always moving. Your body is fluid and it makes more sense. So for this player, they'll stand around for a few days, whoomph, I'm going to huff a sphere 100 miles an hour, 60 feet, 6 inches. It's hard on the body. So, I mean, if I could step in and be, you know, make all of the Blue Jays pitchers the same age for a second, if I could choose to be one of them, I'd be Marco Estrada. Because you can get by on a changeup. You don't have to throw much more than 90, and that's more sustainable. You know, that's why he hasn't really had many injury issues the last couple of years other than his back. But that's not arm-related. You know, you can't link that as closely. So it's, you know, if a young pitcher can succeed throwing 91 with great breaking stuff and location, I mean, do that. But velocity is, that's what gets you noticed at those, you know, terrible high school showcases where we prayed out 17-year-old kids in a radar gun, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, just looking at where the Blue Jays stand there, obviously, this is kind of like the last point I want to bring up, because people are talking about the moves they made, and then, yeah, they added depth and options in the outfield, but you look at the starting outfielder, you got Pilar, Grichuk, and then you have the platoon, obviously maybe Pierce and Granderson. It doesn't really scream out to a lot of people as something that will... I'm not going to say it's not, it, obviously it's an MLB caliber outfield, but it's not one that screams, oh yeah, this is going to be something that moves the needle for this team. Do you think, you know, it's just kind of a wait and see how it works out, or do you think the Blue Jays might consider another move? Because I've heard that too.
Yeah, I think if they did, it would have to subtract from that group, which would be tough. To find a matchup with a team looking to do that. It's the strange thing about the outfield right now is you could take Grichuk, Pilar, Pierce, Granderson. I'll throw in Anthony Alford and maybe even on a whim Dalton Pompey and Teoscar Hernandez. What's that, 7 guys? You could make an argument for each one of those guys having the best season by wins above replacement. Some of those arguments wouldn't be great, but I wouldn't call you an idiot, you know? Like, if you argued that Dalton Pompey would finally click and get back to that 2013-14 form, I'd say, you know, stranger things have happened than a really skilled athletic guy doing
Justin
well.
Justin Smoke.
You know? Why can't Anthony Alford be the best outfielder? I mean, all of those things are at least not ridiculous. That's 7 guys, you know? And I don't think there's one guy that I can sit here and say, boom, he'll be the best. I mean, probably Grichuk by wins above replacement, and, you know, because he does have some defensive value, but... It's much like the additions in the offseason of Solarte and Diaz and to the outfield. It's kind of safe. It's in the middle, you know. The outfield, you hope they're average. The infield, you hope is above average with, you know, Donaldson, whatever Tulo's going to do, and you know, then Travis and Smoke, you think they're above average. Russell Martin can still be above average. And then you hope your pitching is also above average.
Yeah,
add a couple above averages together. What do you get? I don't know. I don't know if it's the playoffs, but a lot of that will depend on the pitching moves they've yet to make. But it's the outfield, I don't think, is going to be the driving force of the team.
Yeah.
If Anthony Alford can stay healthy, I think he's their best outfielder by midseason. I really do. He is a rare athlete. His shoulders are 60 feet wide. He's just he is definitely a football player. Playing baseball, but a natural baseball guy, really really impressive how mature he is for how raw he still is. And you put him in, he's instantly the fastest guy on the team. I don't think it's close. He'd be the only true stolen base threat. The Jays have a Pilar, they have a Grichuk, but they don't have a stolen base guy. They got a couple guys that'll chip in 10.
Whatever. They don't have a Rajay Davis anymore.
Exactly. Don't we all wish we could? But it's the AAA outfield might be just as good as the Major League outfield. You'll have Teoscar Hernandez in right field, Alford probably in center, and maybe Dalton Pompey in left field. Pompey and Alford will probably switch back and forth.
It's pretty good.
Beyond that, you'll have Dwight Smith Jr. on the bench. I think he's pretty much Ezekiel Carrera with better instincts. You'll have Roman Fields, the fastest player in their farm system, in Double A. Do you send him back to Double A? You have J.D. Davis, who had a great fall. Like, they just got all these outfielders. But not like the outfielder, you know. This is a good problem to have, I think, and it'll be clear by June. I just don't think it's going to be clear on opening day.
Bichette and Vlad, really quick. Bichette hit 400 at Parts last season. Vlad was just given the first 80 hit rating from MLB Pipeline in their history. I mean, they're going to play in the Sky Dome, Rogers Center, excuse me, to toe the company line. How exciting is that going to be to see those two, I mean, just hit it all over the park?
Man, it's they're two very rare prospects. In the Bichette is the riskier one. Well, any prospect is risky. But with him, you can really dream on a guy who can stick at shortstop. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he moves to second base. I think he could play a very good third base. But a guy that can hit 300, I think doubles will. I think he'll be a doubles machine because he's all about hard line drive contact. Has the power to hit over 30 home runs. Might be more of a 25 guy. That profile of player. But to have that in the middle of the diamond. In a guy that's so natural on the field, I think is amazing. And scouts didn't like his swing when he got drafted. He's got this massive leg kick. His body's moving all over the place.
Is it like a Batista leg kick? Like,
yeah, it's big. And I see that a lot in the minor leagues now, just kind of like guys trying to do the Stroman shimmy. Like,
no.
Like a guy that's 19 will see it on TV and say, I'll do that. So you see these awful leg kicks, or a guy will pause and throw it to the backstop. But just, like, be your own player. And that's what Bichette is. Like, this is just, he was probably 8 years old having a big, ridiculous leg kick, so it works for him. And he hasn't tried to change that. He hasn't gone to some hitting guru and tried to change that. And I think that's really special. He could, you know, I wonder if he could even beat Vlad to the majors. I'm not sure. It depends on positional availability. It's probably more likely that shortstop or second will be available late this season, but we'll see. Vlad Guerrero, I don't like to call anyone a can't-miss guy because, A, it sets me up to look stupid. I do that enough, I guess. But
we all do.
He's as close as you can find because he looks like a 25-year-old man playing minor league baseball.
He is a big man.
He is huge. I had a scout. Was I in Buffalo or where was I? I was at some minor league stadium. And I had this old scout who was like a cartoon character out of a movie. Like, if you tried to stereotype an old baseball scout.
Yeah.
And I asked him about Vlad, and I was talking to him about a couple other power-hitting prospects. He was listing off what was wrong with them all. And he said, I like my power hitters to have a hard time buying pants. I said, so for a second I just kind of chuckled. I was like, I'm nervous. Okay, sure. Well, what he meant is, you know, just have huge legs and a big butt and a thick midsection, which I suppose makes it hard to buy pants. Love but it. I've always kept that in mind. I like him to have a hard time buying pants. I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
No, that's...
But
everyday struggles aren't
sense,
fun.
You know, his power through his midsection, that's what made Bautista so good at his prime. And Encarnacion, the power they generate from their core. They're not just swinging with their arms. That won't get you anywhere. But they can just... let the bat move in their hands and their body will do all the work. And that's what Vlad can do. He can, you know, part of me thinks that he can be a peak power guy, like a Manny Ramirez, like a Miguel Cabrera. But also part of me thinks that he might be more of a Joey Votto type where he has enough power to hit 50 home runs, but he hits 35 or 36 instead because he walks 100 times and he hits 50 doubles. You know, he just doesn't have enough.
He can also
hit
for contact
home runs. Yeah. And that's what makes him special. That's why he's not Travis Snyder. Because with Travis Snyder, it was always, you know, wow, a huge prospect. He's going to hit 50 home runs if he gets rid of that hole in his swing. But, like, Vlad Guerrero has no if or but. And when you see an analyst...
He's just going
like,
to hit 50 home runs.
Just, yeah, guarantee it.
He's going to rake.
Yeah, I'll delete this when it happens. But when you see an analyst like a Jim Callis or Jonathan Mayo or Ben Battler, these guys with MLB and Baseball America... they don't hand out 80 grade. It is like this holy grail, you know, because it's not like a video game where the best players are all 99, right? Like, they reserve 80 grade for unique special talents. You know, in Baseball America, Mike Trout didn't get an 80 grade hit or power. Bryce Harper didn't, you know. It's Vlad won't be them in the field. Maybe he plays third base at an average rate. That's best case scenario. But as a hitter, he's one of the best hitting prospects, you know, probably the best hitting prospect the Blue Jays have ever had, and one of the best hitting prospects in baseball, I mean, this decade. It's kind of unprecedented.
Yeah. I think we covered pretty much what I wanted to cover, but if you had to give Blue Jays fans, I'm not going to say a reason to be optimistic because that's dumb. I don't want I don't think people should be say, oh, you should look up. Just want to know, what would you tell Blue Jays fans to just watch out for, especially, I'm going to just say prospects-wise, but what should be their focus for this season?
Ooh, health, I think, number one. I think that
there were almost so many
injuries last year that you lost track. I mean, there were times where I forgot about Aaron Sanchez because since his last injury, I'd written 12 DL articles.
Say he pitched 36 innings or something
last
season?
Yeah, I mean, so Aaron Sanchez is the other one. His 2016 season was ridiculous.
He's a Cy Young candidate.
Yeah, he pitched up close to 200 innings, had a 3 ERA. He was one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. And, I mean, even if he comes back at 80% of that, that's big. But health in that is what you have to hope on. And for young players to impact the team, you're talking Anthony Alford, Ryan Barucki, who I think will probably be the number 5 starter by the end of the season, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., I think, now that he's healthy and now that he's established in the United States and Canada playing
great,
the game.
Great hair.
Incredible hair.
He and his brother have it going on. I mean, in terms of character things.
Yeah. So I think, yeah.
But the hair.
Hopefully he doesn't take after his brother in every way. But no. Those young guys coming up.
Follically.
Instead of, random minor league signing number 405. Internal guys. But it's all about health and Sanchez, I think.
Yeah.
You take last year's team, add health to it, that adds a few wins. Add Aaron Sanchez to it, that adds a few more wins. It's a bit of an oversimplification, but not much else has changed. So I think that's where you're looking.
All right. Well, we definitely want to thank Keegan for not only taking the time to come to our lovely studios. It's not like we try to get 3 different other rooms to do this in, but want to thank him for his time. And, he's going to be going down to spring training, which I know he's looking forward to, unlike other MLB writers. So make sure you please keep up with him on Twitter. Check out his – I'm going to have the link for where you can find his book for his prospect rankings. And just he's going to have some other stuff he'll be announcing in the future. We'll save that for when he wants to do it. So please keep an eye on that. Keegan, thank you for the time.
No, thanks, guys. My pleasure.
All right, guys. Just make sure you continue following the Tip of the Tower podcast on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, who sponsor us. And just follow us on Twitter, Tip of the Tower, and Facebook. You know where to find Austin_AustinOwens?
I don't think they do.
Apparently every week we try.
Y'all know.
Do you haven't even gone one? Not even one follower?
No, I know it's steadily growing. It's okay. This is just to cue you in. David always mentions my tag in the thing, and he always tells people to go follow me. Now it's just a running joke that I don't really gain followers, even though I get a shout out from. So we have to do a check in every week to see if Austin's gained any followers.
To see how it goes.
I have. So shout out those people. I don't know if
that'll
it's from
be
the podcast.
Future when you can listen to a podcast and I would say follow me at blah blah blah, and you can just shake your phone and it'll do it.
Do that.
Because we're in a terrible time where if I'm listening to a podcast and somebody says, "Hey, go follow me on Twitter, I'll send you $1 million," I'm like, I'm not gonna open my Twitter app.
No.
You kidding me?
Yeah, took me this long to get the blog or the podcast open.
Exactly. I've come this far.
Exactly. So we want to thank you, and Blue Jays fans, hope for health. Eat your vitamins. Take your vitamins, that's for sure.